I'll give you a quick heads up, then we'll get started. Today, I think what we're going to, normally we do 2 or 3 hours. Today, I think we're just going to go till we run out of questions, and that may happen pretty quickly. I think the holidays, calls are a little light right now. Questions are light. So today is your opportunity. If you want to get through today, press one on your phone. I promise we'll get to you. I will just keep going till we get to all the questions today. So jump in. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, press one on your phone, and we'll get to all of them today. So let's go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham, and we'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, food, nutrition, fitness, diet, exercise, lifestyle, disease, drugs, supplements, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We've been lied to for decades and it's killing us. And Kim and I are here to help you see the truth and find your destination health. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. Kim, welcome.
Hi, Kevin. So glad to be here.
Oh, it's great to be here. And as usual, my head is spinning. I have so much to talk about. But we're going to stick to a topic today. And the topic is an interesting one that a lot of people are obviously interested in. And I thought this is also our webinar this month. You know, we try to pick a theme for the month and kind of stick to it so we can cover it really well here on the show. And we also make that the webinar for that month. So, and the webinar happens to be today. I thought this was going to be easy. I thought it was going to be straightforward. And when I started working on the material and the more I got into it, the more complicated I found it to be. But this is what I do. I take things that are really complicated and I try to simplify them and help people understand them. And I have done so much reading and so much research on this topic. And it also fits in with so many other topics we talk about that I had this overwhelming mountain of material. And I looked at it and I thought, they don't need all this. You know, this is always my struggle when I want to, you know, teach something is how much background do I give them? I mean, this could easily be a full-blown course that could cover months, really. There's just so many topics that tie in. Most people don't need that. Most people don't want that. Most people want to know, just tell me what to do. The thing is, if that's what I'm going to do, especially in a topic like this, you've got to trust me because everything I'm going to tell you flies in the face of everything you've known your whole life. And you're going to look at me and say, you're crazy. That's not how this works. So, you know, do I go through all of the evidence and all of the proof to show that this is how it works, which I just don't think most people want? Or do I just say, look, here's what you do and trust me and try it and see if it works? Because obviously all the things we've been told for decades, starting in the late 60s, early 70s, isn't working. Look around, look at how many obese people we have. Look at how many overweight people we have. Look at how much money gets spent on this problem. Look at how many programs have been created, diets and exercise programs and gadgets and supplements and on and on and on and on. And the more we keep attacking this problem with that one basic premise, the worse the problem gets. Maybe it's time to stop and say, wait a minute, maybe we were working on a false premise.
Oh, I agree. And that's why I love this topic. And I think most people will, I think it'll be a breath of fresh air, actually, because a lot of us have been battling this for a long time. And you think, I'm doing everything right. What's going on? And it gets, the older we get, it gets even more complicated. So it's funny you say that you had all this information and stuff. And I did the same thing when I was doing my piece of the webinar. And I kept thinking how you tackle it and how I do stuff and end up getting too wordy. And I'm thinking, just get to the point, because I was trying to do it that way too, to concise it. And you helped me a lot that way. You took what I had and we took it down even a little further. And I appreciate the fact, I think, even though and that's why I love how you said trust you, because I have an idea where you're going to go with all this background information. And like I said, it's actually kind of refreshing, because all the stuff we've learned in the past, we kind of knock our head against the wall and beat ourselves up internally, thinking, why can't I get this right? And it's not necessarily your fault too. It's just what we've learned. And so, yeah, trust you with what is the right way to tackle this and try it.
Yeah. You just said something that triggered a thought in me, and you're absolutely correct. You said this gets more difficult as we get older. And it absolutely does. We can see that in our own life. We can see it in people around us. If that were the case, so let's just throw out the premise that we've always built weight loss on that's wrong, and that was calories in, calories out. It sounds so simple. It sounds so logical. And it's completely wrong. Completely wrong. And if it were true, then why would it be different when you were 15 or 50? It shouldn't be. If that's all weight loss was, calories in, calories out, it wouldn't get more difficult as we get older. It shouldn't change at all. But there are some things that do change as we get older, and maybe that's a clue. We also know that women struggle with this more than men do, and women after a certain age struggle with this more. So those are all clues pointing us to the fact that this isn't calories, it's hormones. And one specific hormone that we're going to talk about, and I'll get to that in a minute. It's interesting, because the calories in, calories out theory actually comes from a law in physics. And I am such a huge believer in the laws of physics. Obviously, we know they work if they're applied correctly. So I talk all the time on the trucking side, especially fuel mileage. And I'll say fuel mileage is just physics. It's several different branches of physics. It's aerodynamics, it's rolling resistance, it's mechanical drag. And if we apply those lessons of physics to fuel mileage, we solve all the problems, we make improvements. It's beautiful, it works. But we took physics, a specific law of physics, and we tried to apply it to the human body. And that's where it fell apart. It sounds logical. Physics can explain a lot of things, not in this case. The human body is not an engine. An engine, we could absolutely explain energy in, energy out. And there would be some things in there that we could say, well, here's why we put this much energy in and only this much came out. And again, physics would explain why. The human body. The human body is not a machine. It is a very complex, dynamic, biological system. And there are so many variables that we didn't understand, and yet we cling to this simplified explanation of calories in, calories out, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah. So this would be great to dive into. I'm excited.
So it really is all about hormones, and we're going to focus on one specific hormone when it comes to weight loss. And it's by the people who understand this, it's considered the master hormone. It's insulin. And we've talked a lot about blood sugar, and we focus on blood sugar when we really need to be focusing on insulin, but we have to kind of use blood sugar as a surrogate because we can measure blood sugar easily. We can't measure insulin easily. But what we're really looking for when it comes to two big issues, weight loss and diabetes, if we could measure insulin accurately and easily all day long, we would be able to do much better at this. But we can't. Yeah. We don't have that technology yet. We may come up with it soon with all the new advancements in body computers and testing. I'm hoping that somebody comes up with a simple, inexpensive device where we could test insulin levels and insulin response. Instead, we try to test glucose, you know, because glucose is what will trigger the insulin. But there are other triggers for insulin as well. So if we could measure insulin, we'd be able to get more accurate. But blood sugar would certainly help. And all of these things are tied into weight loss. Insulin is the master hormone. It's also what's referred to as the fat storage hormone. When insulin is present, it's telling the body to store fat. So it's not a matter of calories in, calories out, even though that does play a part. It's more what our body does with those calories and the type of calories, because different calories will trigger a different insulin response. So the calories have something to do with this, but not in the way we've always thought. So let me get to a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about that more, and we will get to some calls and questions today as well. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim's here with me. This is Destination Health, and we're talking about, Kim, you know, I'd almost like to put a different term on this. This is something else that came to me. You know, we talk about weight loss a lot because that's what most people want to do. They want to lose weight. I think a better term for this is weight management. You know, and I know you talk a lot about this. The number on the scale isn't nearly as important as we think it is. When we look at body composition, that's much more important. So your percentage of body fat and lean body mass. And, you know, you could have somebody gain 10 pounds and be healthier than if they lost 10. So it's not always a matter of weight loss. Although in our society today, for most people, it is first about weight loss. They've got to get rid of a lot of that excess body fat first. And at the same time, though, they could be working on body composition, building more lean muscle mass. Lean muscle mass is good for us in so many ways, and fat just isn't. So we'd really like to replace one with the other. So the insulin issue, which is what this is really all about, is when we have too much insulin, it is the fat storage hormone. So it's not about calories are just energy. So let's, you know, that might help people as well. Calories are really a measurement of energy. So it's not about how much energy you take into your body. It's about what your body does with that energy. Does it use that energy to fuel movement of some kind? Or does it store that energy as fat? That's really what's going to determine your weight. And insulin is what will make that deciding factor. So if you eat a lot, your body can do two things with it. It can store it as fat, which is what happens when insulin is present, or it can just use it as energy. This gets confusing because it's this whole circular argument. So what happens if even if there's insulin present, but I'm or not present, but I'm eating a lot of calories and I don't burn them off? Well, what will happen then if you just become a couch potato? If insulin was never present and you attempt to eat too many calories, your body will self-regulate. Your appetite will diminish and you just won't eat as much. Your body is really good if we give it all the right nutrition and we do all the right things. Your body is really good at managing its energy. If you take a lot in and don't burn it off, it will adjust so that you just take less in. And appetite is what controls this. And appetite is controlled by hormones. And it all comes back to insulin again. So we have other hormones, ghrelin and some of the others, that control appetite, whether we're hungry or not hungry. So this is where it starts to get really complicated. And how deep do I want to get into all that? I don't know that everybody needs to know all the pathways and everything that's happening. We just have to trust that if we do all the right stuff, our body will self-regulate its energy needs. If we want to be really active, and there are a lot of benefits to being really active, to moving and you know, resistance training, or just getting out and, you know, doing things that keep us active, it has tons of benefits. It will burn off that energy. I don't even, we could call them calories, but it will burn off that energy. But your body is immediately going to say, hey, you just burned off a whole bunch of energy. You're going to need more. And it will ramp up your appetite. So whether we're sedentary or active can have good weight management. Either way, you could be, I don't want to promote this, but you could be a couch potato. You could be very inactive and have good weight control if everything else is working right. If you're eating the right foods, if you're managing stress, if you're sleeping well, if you're connecting, if all of these other things, if we address the foundations and the pillars that we talk about all the time, your activity level doesn't determine your weight. Your weight will be normalized. What will happen is the more active you are, the more food you're going to eat because you need the energy. So because of what we've been told forever, I understand that's probably confusing to people, but did I make any sense there?
No, you made a lot of sense. Yeah, and I keep in mind of weight management and weight translates, you know, it's a number scale and it translates to health. Ultimately, it's one of the tools we say, you know, that you use. And I say that because I was hung up on a number on a scale for years. It's good to learn what that number represents, and good to learn what, and again, that's in the, and we talk about the separating, you know, the diet and the moving and exercise. And we are just talking about weight management, and on our webinar, we'll get more into, benefits, other benefits of moving, you know, for chronic disease and so forth like that. But then first place to start, and like we share, it's the number one thing people are saying on their NutriQ requests, almost 1400 NutriQ requests, and probably 60% of them had one of their top one concern is weight loss. So it's big. It's big out there.
It's huge. We're huge because of it. It really is a problem. But what we've been told, this calories in, calories out, has failed us miserably. And we have to realize that first. And, you know, the people who promote this have really guilted everybody into the fact that, well, this is it. This is how it works. It's calories in, calories out. If you're still gaining weight, it's your fault. You're doing it wrong. You're eating too much. You're not exercising enough. Mm-hmm. So we see people eat less and less and exercise more and more, and it doesn't work. I remember this example when I lived in Florida, and I lived there for 14 years. almost every time I would go out, I say almost every time, I don't know, but it was a high percentage of every time I would leave my house in the car, I would see this one woman running. She ran a lot. And this went on for years. But every time I saw her, I would start to notice she's bigger than she was last year. And by the end, I was wondering how she was even running anymore. I'm not exaggerating. Over the years, she must have gained 50 pounds. And she was running all the time. I said, how is that even possible? Because I didn't understand it. She had to have run a lot because I saw her so often. It wasn't just a coincidence. You know, and there are people that put on a lot of miles. And I've watched people actually gain weight while they're doing this.
I was one. When I, you know, when I did the keto diet to begin with in 2007, but then started endurance running and started putting the carbs back in because you're told to carb load. And, you know, you have the Gatorades and that kind of stuff. Then it was like instantaneous almost. And it wasn't a huge amount, but it was enough where you're thinking, good Lord, you know, I'm running this much, many miles, it should be coming up. But the other thing is people, you know, like they do that. They'll, you know, I run to eat, you know, that kind of stuff. But it does come down to what you're eating at the same time.
And that's the major factor. So we have to keep bringing this back to insulin, because it's insulin that determines what your body's going to do with the energy. So we have to look at what drives insulin. And this is where things can get complicated, but we can simplify a big part of this. The biggest driver in insulin is food. There are others. Exercise affects insulin. So exercise can absolutely have an effect on your weight, but it's not because of calories. It's because of insulin. Sleep can affect your insulin levels. Stress can affect your insulin levels. And then when we talk about stress, there's lots of stressors, food reactions. So we've actually found where somebody is doing most things right, and yet they're not losing weight. And we think we're addressing all the things, and sometimes it turns out to be something as simple as a strong food reaction. And that's why we recommend the fit test. That's why we do it, because sometimes it's as simple as eliminating a food you're reacting to, and all of a sudden you start losing weight again. Because that stress of the food reaction in your body is the same fight or flight response. And that can affect insulin levels. Now, we can measure it in blood glucose levels, but we know that when blood glucose rises, insulin has to rise with it. And when insulin rises, we go into fat storage mode. So this is the whole bowl of spaghetti that's all wrapped up together. And it's why this can get complicated, but we're here to try to simplify it. So if we talk about food, we really have two issues to look at when we talk about food and weight management. And we're going to tell you what those two are right after this break. We're going to get to more and also your calls and questions. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. So, Kim, when it comes to food and weight management, and again, we're talking about insulin, so I'm going to talk about two ways that food affects our insulin levels. The two ways, and then I'll explain each one of them, are the macronutrients that drive insulin or don't drive insulin, and food reactions that stress the body and affect insulin. So to get the first one out of the way, because it's simple, you have to address any food reactions you're having. The problem is we don't know them. We're all reactive to foods, more so in our current diet today. We just don't know what they are because it's not immediate. It's not like you eat something and see this immediate result. It's affecting your body in all kinds of ways that we can't gauge. It's why we love our fit test. I mean, this is a wonderful test. You can buy it in our store. You do it at home. You don't need a doctor. You don't need a lab. And the results are simple. Here's the foods you're reacting to. Avoid them. But we don't need to complicate it any more than that. Here are the foods you're reacting to. Just avoid them. Now, in our mentoring and our one-on-one programs, we can help people, dial down to the ones that are really important. Eventually, we may be able to help people add some of those foods back in. But, if you want to do this on your own and you're not ready for one of our programs, take the fit test, look at the results, and just avoid those foods. It doesn't have to be any more complicated than that.
Yeah, and that's a huge piece of it. And that was for me, because, I had been not 100% with grain free. I'm not as diligent as you are. I strive to be. But I found that it was eggs, dairy, and wheat, and eggs were my go-to breakfast, so just cutting those out. Now I have been able to add them back in a few days a week. I do the cocoa pulse test after I was off for probably about 3 months. And I was happy about that. Now dairy, I can't. As soon as I started dairy again, then, you feel it. I feel my heart, race and pulse go up. So, that was a huge thing for me. Huge.
Yeah. So that one is simple, really. We have the test. Mm-hmm. It's accurate. It's easy to do. That's all we need to talk about. Go to our store. You can find the fit test. Do it. Avoid the foods. You'll be amazed at the results. Weight loss is one thing, but just how you feel. If you're reacting negatively to a food, which is what this test will point out, it affects your body in a lot of ways that you'd never imagine. Allergies and skin issues and just all kinds of crazy stuff going on, your immune system. So it really is a great early step in, moving towards being really healthy, is eliminating those foods you're reacting to. So then we have to talk about the second way that food is affecting insulin. And this all comes down to the three macronutrients: carbohydrates, protein, and fat. So carbohydrates are the biggest driver of insulin. When you consume carbohydrates, whether it's sugar or starch, you are going to spike insulin. And forget about the glycemic index. Forget about the fact that, if it's whole grains, it's okay. Forget all those things you've been told they're all wrong, coasts in your body. Whether it's released fast or slow, insulin still has to respond. And if insulin responds, you're putting your body into the fat storage mode. We want to keep insulin down. Now, here's the other problem with insulin. It's, again, we get into this circular argument. The more you spike insulin because of all these things we're talking about, food and food reactions and stress and poor sleep and all those things, anything that spikes insulin makes you insulin resistant over time, which means your body has to produce more insulin. So this is a horrible catch-22, and it's hard to get out of, because the longer you do this, the more I've used this example before. We treat all the problems of insulin because we think it's a problem of blood sugar when it's not. So we treat all of the problems with more insulin. That's like saying, we have a heroin addict and we're just going to keep giving him more heroin because he'll feel good. Well, he will. If you keep giving them more and more heroin, they feel great. eventually it will kill them. And it's a pretty horrible death. Insulin really isn't any different. The more insulin you have, the more your body needs, the more it needs, the more you give it, and it will kill you. So we've got to stop that insulin response. That has to be our number one focus for weight loss and just health overall, because it causes so many problems. So carbohydrates drive insulin. They're the number one factor. That's why the nutrient-dense keto works so well to help people lose weight. There are some other things that can block it, but it comes back to insulin. Eventually, it all comes back to the root of the problem. But the number one factor is carbohydrates. So let's get rid of those. Let's go very, very low carb and address the other areas. And nothing has ever been proven to be more successful at losing weight. So low carb first. I mean, we just have to start there. And the carbs we eat need to be really healthy. They need to be carbs that are high in fiber. That's why we count net carbs. Protein can also drive insulin. So we do have to be careful with protein. It's not quite as straightforward as carbohydrates are. But if, and this is, I believe, where Adkins really failed. Adkins failed in two ways. Because if you go back and do the research, Dr. Adkins believed in a ketogenic diet. He never used the word because it kept getting confused with ketoacidosis. And people kept fighting him on it, saying it was dangerous, it would kill people. And he dropped that term because of that confusion, even though the two have nothing to do with each other. And it was just referred to as the Adkins diet, and it was considered low carb. Everybody forgot about being in ketosis, and they turned it into a very high protein diet. You would hear people talk about, oh, I can eat all the bacon I want. I can eat all the steak I want. I can eat all the eggs I want. No, you can't. That's not how this diet works. All of those things, bacon, butter, eggs, they're all a part of a ketogenic diet. But the whole point makes me crazy. I've been kicked out of so many Facebook groups over this. Because people always say, is this a ketogenic food? And this is a pet peeve of mine. There's no such thing as a ketogenic food. There is no list. There are foods that will help you be in ketosis and foods that could possibly keep you out of ketosis. But the whole definition of a ketogenic diet is you're producing ketones. That's it. So I could make an argument that I could eat a Big Mac every day and still produce ketones. That doesn't make a Big Mac a ketogenic food. So that kind of makes me a little crazy, but the whole point is to stay in ketosis. In order to do that, and here's the key, you have to keep insulin response to a minimum. You know, we always say, well, if there's too much blood sugar, you can't go into ketosis. That's true. But it's not the blood sugar. It's the ketones that are causing, or it's the ketones that will get you there. It's the insulin that's stopping it from happening. So again, it will always come back to the insulin. We use blood glucose as the marker because that's what we can measure. But over the years, we've gotten the two confused, or we've just thought that blood sugar is everything, when really what we're looking for is the insulin. So we have to start with the macronutrients after we address the food sensitivities. So we know that carbohydrates drive insulin. Protein can drive insulin, but we do want protein. We need it. We just need a lot less than most people think. And we want that protein to be really high quality. And then the third macronutrient is fat. And fat is the only one that doesn't trigger an insulin response. It's why we promote a high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carbohydrate diet. The problem there is we know what they've done with fat. They've made us so afraid of it, and it's all wrong. There's no reason to fear fat. You know, once you find your macronutrient balance, a lot of people might be surprised how much fat they can have in their diet and be really, really healthy doing it, as long as we eat the right fats. the good healthy fats. And we've covered those on lots of shows. We've covered them in webinars. So we're not going to go real deep into the details on that, but that's it. If we're looking at food and weight loss, find your food sensitivities with the fit test, eliminate them, get your macronutrients in balance. And we're about 90% of the way there on weight loss. The rest of it comes down to stress management, sleep, those kind of things. And we're going to go much deeper into those on the webinar. So we're going to come back. We're going to get to your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. So, Kim, we've got a bunch of questions. I want to get to those. Anything you want to kind of wrap up on that, or did it make sense?
It does make sense. And I hope people feel hopeful with it, again, because it could throw them into the thing, not what you said, but just the whole thing, you know, insulin, because actually it's kind of cool. Insulin is the one area, even through class and through the show, that I've probably learned the most on, like knew something. Like it's one of the things that you've always known, but I always thought of it as, you know, the shot, the medicine, you know, first. And so I just want them to know it is so bio-individual. We all have our different things that work. And just be hopeful for that, because it's not a quick fix to figure it out, but it's an exciting and fascinating one. Get completely fascinated with learning more about this, seeing how your body reacts to things, especially with the food inflammation. And it's a journey. It's, you know, we talk about it. It's not a diet that has an end thing when you hit your goal. Have those goals and then have new goals. But this is the way we're living and thriving. And just embrace it and come with us to help, you know, figure out what works best for you. You know, get out there and have fun with it and see what works for you as a person.
Absolutely. Well said. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off in Arizona. JR, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Kim and Kevin. Great talking to you again, and thanks for taking my call.
Hi there.
You're welcome. We help you with today?
Well, I got a couple things based on what you're talking about initially with this insulin thing. I've got a couple of female friends that I've known for 15 years and 8 to 10 years collectively, and they've both been almost as wide as they are tall. And I've got one of them kind of starting on this ketosis thing, and I got her into some bulletproof things, and you know, I'm trying to slim her down a little bit to, you know, make them more healthy. They'll feel better about themselves. And I got another friend I just ran back into, and I've been working on her a little bit, and I'll be working more on her in the next couple of months because I'll be seeing her more. And this isn't really a romantic thing. They're both 20 years, you know, younger than me anyway. But, you know, if they lose a little weight, who never know? You never know. But, you know, if they get on a health kick. But yeah, that's kind of interesting, and you know, I might be using some more of your stuff online to help them out. But my reason for calling you today is I found something interesting on you know, some of the health stuff I look at, and I cooked a couple of steaks yesterday in clarified butter. I used 3 bottles of it, and basically put the steaks in there, kept them between 128 degrees for like almost 2 hours. One was well done, one was medium rare. When I took them out, they were like almost rare, but I went ahead and did what he said. He threw them on a grill, high heat, for like 45 to a minute aside, and then that would bring it out, you know, sear it, bring it out. And I got to admit, that was a pretty good way to cook steak. It was pretty damn good. They were a couple of, well, what's the word I'm looking for? A couple of nice ones, you know. But anyway, yeah. I strained this this ghee, this clarified butter, back into the jars. And I'm just curious, do you think the steak being in a raw state when I put it in there and only, you know, running at 125 degrees did anything to the ghee where I cannot use it again? Or do you think it's okay to just maybe dump the ghee in my coffee as I normally do and just go ahead and use those three bottles up? I got to thinking about it, and I'm like, well, I wonder if I got polluted with something from the raw meat before it cooked it, or did keeping it that temperature, I don't know, it's just kind of a weird one. I'm not that brainiac on that kind of stuff.
So we can make a couple comparisons here, and I can't tell you that I know the science behind this because it would have to be tested if we want to be really sure, but we can put a little logic to this. For centuries, for long, long time, we've cooked, say, bacon, and lots of people save the bacon fat and leave it right there on the counter and use it to cook with. I do.
Oh, that's what I grew up on.
Yeah, exactly. I've even used it to make mayonnaise, the bacon fat left over to make mayonnaise. Now, there's one difference, though, that I want to point out here. Bacon's usually cooked at a high enough temperature. It's killing everything. And it, really, bacteria would have a very, very hard time growing in fat. That's why we can leave fat out. It doesn't need to be refrigerated. Cooking at that low temperature may create some issues. I think at the very least, if you were going to do this, I would refrigerate it. So if there is any bacteria, we slow down the growth of that bacteria. And honestly, after cooking steak in it, I don't think I would want to put it in my coffee. Just taste alone, or, you know, now I may use it to cook again. But I think I would either make sure I heated it up to a sufficient temperature if I were going to leave it out on the counter, or I would refrigerate it and probably not let it go more than a week or so in there. Again, we would have to run tests on that to see, is there bacteria? Is it growing? That kind of stuff. But I think with the little logic, you could definitely cook in clarified butter and reuse it. I would just be a little concerned about the temperature you cooked it in. It was relatively low, which I cook my steaks with what's called sous vide. You cook in a water bath at a very, very precise temperature, and you get amazing steaks, beautifully tender, cooked perfectly all the way through. And I do cook my steaks at 120 degrees in sous vide, and then I sear them. Sous vide actually has an advantage because even at those temperatures, even though technically we're out of what they call the safe zone for food, the longer you cook sous vide, the more bacteria you kill, even at very, very low temperatures. And you can actually pasteurize food at a really low temperature with a long enough time. So people have always thought that sous vide was unsafe. It's the opposite. It's extremely safe when it's done. In your case, I would be careful with that clarified butter. I'm not saying don't use it. I think I would either make sure I heated it sufficiently or I would refrigerate it, one of the two.
Okay. Yeah, because I get to thinking about it, and I'm kind of a common sense guy like that too. And I just got, I'm going to get another opinion just to see if I'm thinking the right way. And that's kind of what I thought. Now, when you're talking about heating this up, is this something you think I could heat up to like 400 degrees for a while to kill all the bacteria out of it and then go back to just leaving it on the counter type thing? Because I'm thinking about taking this with me on the truck. Or would you just keep it on the 1 week refrigerator in the refrigerator kind of thing?
I think I would be fine. 400 degrees is not too high for ghee. Ghee is good to 450 or 500 degrees without damaging it.
Right.
Now, anytime we heat fat, we are going to do some damage to it. And if we keep reheating it, we'll do a little more damage each time. But saturated fats, and ghee especially, is pretty stable. So one good heating to 400 degrees should kill all the bacteria, and you should be fine. I think you might end up with some flavors in there. That's why I'm not sure it would be great in coffee, but I think it would be safe to use to cook things in. Let's go to Oklahoma. Wade, welcome to the program. Wade, are you with us? You know what, Wade, I'm going to put you back on hold. We'll try to come back. Let's go to Oregon. Justin, welcome to the program.
Kevin, Kim, how are you?
Hi, Kevin.
Good. What's on your mind today?
Found a couple of treasures, and I figured I'd let the tribe know if they're traveling in that part of the country where to get them. Exit 99 on I-5 in Oregon. There is a place I've always driven by, but I stopped at it last night, called Seven Feathers Casino, and they've got a little truck stop there, or a big truck stop, actually. There's tons of parking. But I was able to pick up some kombucha with some probiotic strains that are not found in your typical Walmart kombuchas. I was able to find grass-fed beef jerky, and I was even able to get some wild-caught salmon jerky, and the only ingredients in that are wild salmon and hardwood smoke. Go ahead.
And I hate to cut you off, but we're coming right up on the end of the show. Seven Feathers is an awesome stop. It's our first stop when Lisa and I travel out of here and we're heading south. It's about 6 hours away, so it's a good first day to get on the road. Awesome RV park and truck stop. And you're absolutely right. In the truck stop, they have some very cool food. All the things you mentioned and some other things. So, Justin, thanks for bringing that up. Like I say, it's one of our favorite stops. It's always the first stop when we leave here and we're heading south. So I'd love to see more of that going on around the country. Kim, we're out of time. Anything you want to wrap up with?
You know what? Not too late to join the webinar if you're listening. We just had somebody sign up for it. I was able to send her off the email right away, so a link to register. So go to letstruck.com at the health services or give us a call at 855-800-3835.
Excellent. We will see you next time. In the meantime, eat real food. Sleep like a baby. Connect like you mean it. Move as though your life depended on it. And remember, a healthy person has hundreds of wishes and a sick person only has one. Stay healthy, my friends. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, we're going to do a second hour. I'll give you a quick heads up. Looks like we could fit questions in. And I committed to just running the show today until we get to all the questions. So today is your chance. Got a question, a comment, anything at all you want to talk about, jump in, press one on your phone, and we will get to it. Here we go.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cocker. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, food, nutrition, diet, lifestyle, exercise, training, drugs, disease, supplements, you name it. We'll talk about it. Should probably throw in stress and sleep and all those other things as well. We've been lied to for decades, and it's killing us. And Kim and I are here to help you find the truth and find your destination health. And we're going to get to your calls and questions in just a little bit. Kim, welcome.
Hi, glad to be here, Kevin. Love Wednesdays.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been working on themes on the show itself here on the air, and we've been wrapping those themes around the webinars that we do every month. We're going to continue to expand those. We're working on some online courses around health. And, you know, the interesting thing is if I take each one of these areas that we focus on, we've done webinars on blood sugar. We've done webinars on adrenals, doing a webinar on weight loss. We, you know, we talk about autoimmune disease. We talk about so many areas, and each area can be incredibly complicated because our bodies are absolutely amazing. And we're learning so many new things. You know, we talk about the gut microbiome, and I have some things to report on that today as well. But the interesting thing that we're really seeing, you and I are working with a lot of people one-on-one, two-on-one. We tag team them. And we have amazing programs, start to finish. We're there. We address everybody's issues, and they can stay with us, and we'll literally address every health issue they're facing. We've seen incredible improvements in people. We've had people that their blood sugar control was so poor they had lost their CDL, and we actually have them back to their diabetes, or any sign of diabetes or pre-diabetes is gone. You know, it's interesting. They've said forever, you have diabetes, you can't cure this. All you can do is manage it. Well, that's not true, because technically it's not even a disease. It's just, you know, a reading. Because if you ask a doctor, what is diabetes? Well, diabetes is when your blood sugar is over this. And pre-diabetes is when it's over this. Well, okay, then if my blood sugar isn't over those two, I don't have diabetes. That's their definition. And we've been able to get people from, you know, such poor blood sugar control that they are absolutely diabetic, on multiple medications, lost their CDL, and now they're not diabetic. It's amazing, but, you know, we're certainly not the only ones doing that. There's a revolution in this, and it's good to see. I'm not sure that it's going to get to much of the population, and I'm going to talk about why on that in a little bit. But what I was really getting to here is, no matter how complicated all these areas are, all these autoimmune conditions and all these problems we see in people, no matter what we talk about, it all comes back to the same solution. That's the beauty of this. This doesn't have to be complicated. This is simple. You know, we talk about the foundations and the pillars. You get the foundations and the pillars right, everything else will fix itself. Now, there are obviously some diseases that could truly be genetic. They're pretty rare. And there are some conditions or diseases that if they've already occurred, we may not be able to fix them. Or if they're so far advanced, we may not be able to reverse them. I'm not saying we could fix everything. You know, if you've developed type 1 diabetes, which is becoming more and more common in adults, which is really scary. That never used to happen. Type 1 is an autoimmune condition, normally happens in childhood. Once you have it, we don't know how to fix that. We can't get your pancreas to start producing insulin again, but we can get your blood sugar so well under control that your insulin needs are much easier to manage, and you'll avoid all the long-term complications of type 1. But no matter all these things, how complicated we get, it all comes back to address the foundations and address the pillars. And just to refresh everybody's memory, or we always get a lot of new callers, the foundations start with a properly prepared, nutrient-dense, whole food diet. That's it. That's the foundation to all of this. If you were to achieve that, you're 90% of the way there. You would solve and fix so many of your problems with that one step alone that it's absolutely amazing. The scary part is when I say real food, I have a lot of people that don't know what real food is. Isn't that a shame?
Yeah, it is. But that's what we always have to remember on here is that we've been talking about this and it's become so internalized. But yeah, we have to back up and explain that sometimes.
Yeah. So we start there, real food, nutrient dense, real food. Then we go on to the rest of the foundations, digestion, sugar handling, mineral balance, hydration, Those things are, and I know that's going to confuse a lot of people because they don't even know what they mean, but that's what we're here for. We talk about it on the radio show. We create webinars. If you really want help, we do this, you know, directly with you in our programs. So don't feel like, oh my God, what's he talking about? Sugar handling and fatty acid balance. And it, they're not that complicated. We can make them simple. And again, they all come back to that diet. Sometimes though, with digestion, we've damaged our digestive process so badly through a poor diet that we have to fix it. And many times we need supplements. Almost every time on digestion, we need supplements. Sugar handling, the same thing. We've damaged our sugar handling capabilities so badly that just going to the real food diet may not help. We may need to address that problem, fix it. And our goal moving forward is always to get back to the point where just our diet and our lifestyle keeps us healthy. We don't need drugs. We don't need supplements. It is possible to get there. So after the foundations, we talk about the pillars, which are sleep, movement, and connection, because those things all have an effect on our physiology as well. But the good news is you get the foundations right, you get the pillars right, and we could forget about this thing we call health. We are so obsessed with it, and we shouldn't be. It should be our natural state. We shouldn't have to think about health. We shouldn't have to talk about health. We shouldn't have to work on health. If we just lived the way we evolved with the foundations and the pillars, this would become a non-issue. Wouldn't that be exciting?
Oh, sure would. Sure would.
We wouldn't spend 1 minute on this. We wouldn't have to. We would just be healthy and we could go on about living. That's what's really exciting. In some ways, after 3 years of this, for my own health, I could kind of be there right now. I wouldn't have to think about this, wouldn't have to do it. It's second nature to me now. I continue to work on it because I kind of really like it a lot. It's very interesting. I love helping other people, and I'm still tweaking and hacking and, you know, trying all kinds of other things. But honestly, if this isn't what I did for a living, I could just forget the whole health thing. It's not something I'd have to think about or focus on. That's pretty exciting. You
know, that really is. And I never thought about it until you said that. It would just be part of who you are. Yeah, if you weren't so focused to read and learn for the show and for the stuff you like to do, yeah, it would just suddenly be just who you are. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it really is. So that's exciting to be able to know that we can get to that point. You know, there was a time 5 years ago, I was just like everybody else. I assumed as you get older, you're going to get weaker. You're going to get fatter. You're going to get more tired. You're going to get more sore. Your risk of all these diseases go up. I mean, it was kind of a scary thing. And we talk about it, you know, we joke about it. Oh, after 50, you know, you're going to have a colonoscopy every, no, you're not. God, how did we survive on this planet without colonoscopies after 50? And people will say, well, nobody lived past 50. Bullshit. They lived for 100 years. The problem is we've been brainwashed into that average lifespan, and average is just a horrible number to use for anything. People lived long, healthy, vibrant lives long before we had medication and medical procedures. Life was dangerous back then, so there were lots of things that could kill us young, and that's what drove the average way down. But if you avoided all those things, the human body, without any interventions, could live to 100 years, even 1,000 years ago. It wasn't even unusual. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. Kim, that's the one argument that absolutely just makes me lose my mind, is that we've been brainwashed to believe that the way we live now is healthier and actually helps us live longer. And that's absolutely not true. And there are very well-documented cases. There were Indian tribes in the southwest part of the United States that had way, way more people live to 100 than we have today. It's just we always use that stupid number, average lifespan. And I'll give you one example of why this number gets driven so low when we go back to prior to medical interventions. The one area that doctors and medicine have made incredibly safe that used to be outrageously dangerous is childbirth. Women used to die a lot giving birth. Young children used to die a lot because of harsh conditions and predators and all kinds of reasons. And that drove the numbers way down. Think about this. Women are capable of childbirth around 12 or 13 years old, right?
Right.
And that's natural. I mean, we think of that as very odd now. People might call you a pervert for even talking about it, but we just have to look at biology. That's how the human body was designed. When a girl goes through puberty, she is now capable of giving birth. And that was considered normal, and many women did give birth at that young of an age. So imagine a 14-year-old dying in childbirth and the child dying shortly after, which was very common. Now we have a death at age 14 and we have a death at less than one. If we only look at those statistics, the average lifespan for a human is 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's how averages work. That was a common thing. So you could have lots of people living to 100, but as long as you had women especially dying young in childbirth and children dying young, it's going to drive the average way down. We had other problems. If you got an infection, you were probably going to die. Antibiotics fixed that. We have a huge problem with those now, but that's a whole nother show. It was just a dangerous lifestyle. You could get eaten by a tiger. You could fall off a rock and die because we didn't have any kind of emergency medicine. There were lots of warring tribes, so you could get killed, you know, by another human. It was a dangerous life. But if you avoided all those things, living to a very old age with no disease was not uncommon. It was the norm. That's how our body is designed. We have either forgotten that, or we've been brainwashed into believing that wasn't true.
Yeah, that's really good. I love those statistics you have, and that it makes sense when you bring up that, you know, the history with that. So, yeah, that should give people hope and to take control, you know. And again, not just ourselves, but change our family tree. You know, change our family with how we're going to eat.
Mm-hmm. Great point. We know it's generational. So that's encouraging. Yeah. So here's the problem. Here's what we're fighting against. We are fighting against a lot of money and a lot of profit. And I've said this before, big food, big agriculture, big medicine, and big government. It's what got us here. It's what's going to keep us here. I don't see this changing anytime soon for the general population. We see so many examples of this. The recent example of the American Heart Association coming out and saying coconut oil is not healthy.
Yeah.
What a
shame it was.
You know, in our world, you and I spend a lot of time in the new nutrition. And, you know, we read the same people in the same blogs. Everybody I know that understands this has blasted that. I have seen so many articles, so many podcasts. There is so much proof. The American Heart Association should be ashamed of itself. And I really hope that there is a huge public shaming of them coming out with this misinformation right after they took $500,000 from the American Soybean Association. Yeah. But that's what we're up against. And unfortunately, a lot more people read the original article in USA Today and saw, you know, it be picked up on all the TV news, and very few people will see what you and I are reading. That's why we're in a fight here. I'll give you another example. I had a caller the other day. I don't remember. Oh, it wasn't even on Destination Health. It was when we had Larry Winget on the show. And the guy said, you know, he was actually mad because we were having the CMC in Iowa. And he said, why would you ever have it there? This is where we grow all the corn, the wheat, and the soybeans. And you're just against all of those things. And I said, so is that all Omaha or Council Bluffs is good for? Are there other things that are really good about that area? I mean, why would this even be a factor? And besides, try to find a state that doesn't grow those three things anymore. We grow them every available square inch we can find because they're so profitable. But he was angry. I could tell he was angry. Well, it turns out. And then he said, and what's the thing with this whole grass-fed thing anyway? That doesn't matter. Tell me the difference between a grass-fed and a corn-fed cow. And I started to tell him the difference. And he said, and oh, by the way, I raised 200 head of cattle. I've been doing it for years. And I said, well, then you should know, can't raise cattle on corn alone. I mean, you can feed them corn all you want. You're going to have to give them all kinds of drugs or they'll die. I mean, that's well documented. That's not me. And he said, oh, no, that's not true. And if you try to feed him on grass alone, he claimed you had to give him something else to scratch their stomach, which is absolutely not true, because ruminants lived on this planet for millions of years before we came along, and they ate grass. They needed no intervention. They never ate corn. They ate grass. That's it. Nothing but grass. That's what a ruminant is designed to eat. So we couldn't even get into that argument because, and it turns out he sent me a nasty email, called me all kinds of names, called all the listeners all kinds of names, and claimed that the only reason I'm telling all these lies is so that I can sell things in the store.
Oh, geez.
And yet he can't see that if profit were the motive, there's much more profit in keeping people unhealthy than making, if people listen to what you and I say, it won't be long. They won't need us at all anymore. Zero profit. If you look at what big agriculture, big food, big medicine does, they keep people slaves for their entire life. They have profit forever. And the more you follow what they tell you, the more profit those companies make, and you get sicker and fatter and you die miserably. So if he's looking at the profit motive, he's looking in the wrong place. Now, I have bashed doctors, and I've clearly said, I don't think doctors are bad people. They're the victim of a very bad system. Their intentions were good. They've been brainwashed and educated by a system that is designed for profit alone, nothing else. And many doctors are finally realizing that. You know, one of our tribe members found an NTP in North Carolina. I didn't realize this. Do you know it's illegal to be an NTP in North Carolina?
No, I didn't. I know I haven't even investigated around here, but that's sad. That is sad.
Yeah, it's illegal. You can't tell people what kind of food they should. So he found one who is a functional medicine doctor, a chiropractor, and an NTP. And I thought, you've hit the holy grail. It's not that I don't believe in doctors. I mean, there's a guy who studied medicine. He studied physiology, the body, chiropractic, and now nutrition. It doesn't get any better than that. That guy would be my hero. He's got so much knowledge and the ability to use them together that's absolutely the kind of person you would want. But that's really, really rare. So I've said it's, you know, doctors have good intentions. They're in a bad system. Farmers are the same way. Farmers aren't bad people. They're not raising corn and soy and wheat to kill people, to make them sick. They're raising it because, first off, that's what the demand is for. And they're just filling the demand. And they've also been brainwashed and indoctrinated into a system that doesn't benefit them or anybody else. It only benefits big agriculture and big food. And by results also benefits big medicine, because it makes everybody so sick. We need doctors and medicine and surgeries and procedures and hospitals. But I don't blame this on the farmers. He was taking it personally. I'm going to come back and talk about that and so much more. We're also going to get to some of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim's here with me. This is Destination Health. So, Kim, to get back to that, I don't blame the farmers, just like I don't blame the doctors. But I've had these same arguments with doctors, and what they fall back on is they'll say, but I have an education. I went to medical school. I've practiced medicine for 20 years, and you don't. That's what they'll say. I've done it with nurses, with doctors, and I'll say, look, I get it. You do have the education. You do have the experience. Let's just talk about results. You have a patient who every year ends up on more and more medication and ends up sicker and sicker, and he's your patient. He's been following your advice for years. The results keep getting worse. And yet, with nutrition and some lifestyle changes, we turn that around completely and get them off of medications, and they get healthier. You can argue education all you want, but you don't have the results. Our medical community in general has horrendous results.
Whoops. Oh, I thought I lost you.
There you are.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love the way you put that, Kevin, because it is true. And it's not against the doctors that we know. You know, I have family that in the health profession, and they go into it with such desire to help and stuff. And you hear it from people within the NTP and TC course that are coming from the medical field, like, and say they just didn't know. They're not taught that with nutrition. And I feel the same way, like you said, about farmers. So it's just getting educated, not believing everything that we hear out there. I think that's one of the biggest things that you help bring to all of us, is to question, you know, just don't take it what's fed to you per se, you know, question everything. It's too important.
Yeah. You know, this caller, and I get it. He's angry. He's taking this personally, and he's lashing out. He called me all kinds of names, called our listeners all kinds of names, and then went on to say, you know, I have a bachelor's in animal husbandry. Mm-hmm. I've been raising cattle for 21 years. And I thought, he sounds just like the doctors. You can tell me all the education you have, but all we have to do is look at the results. This isn't right. The system is completely broken. And if they, I understand why this is so emotional for them. First off, everything they know is being questioned, and that's hard for anybody. And their livelihood is being threatened. That's really hard. So I get it why they react this way, but it still doesn't make it right. We just have to look at what's right, and we have to fix the system. And cows are no different than humans. I always go back to, how did we evolve? If there's a question, if there's an argument, this study says that, that study, screw all that. Let's just look at how we evolved and how animals evolved. And ruminants, cows, sheep, goats, all those things, they did really well without us. And they weren't eating corn. They weren't eating soy. And they weren't taking antibiotics and growth hormones and all kinds of other crazy stuff. I mean, that's all we have to look at. You know, he wanted to argue whether or not you could raise a cow on pure corn. And he said, I've raised feedlot cattle for 20 years. Well, of course, we know you can do it. But look at what it takes and look at how wrong it is and look at all the problems it creates. And yet all we have to do is, you know, look at animals in nature. Look at bison. I don't think people realize how many bison used to exist in this country. It was ungodly amounts, millions of animals on the prairie. They didn't need us. And that the beauty of that system is it was so powerful and so well balanced that it could sustain all of that life. And we screwed it up. And we're the only ones that can fix it, but we have to admit that these things are just wrong.
Yeah, and we can make a difference there, you know, even just with, you know, our buying power and where we spend our money and you know, share with others. So sometimes it feels like it's too big, you know, that what are we going to do to make a difference? Well, we can, you know, and I hope we do.
Yeah, it's no different than any time I talk about, let's say, politics. Those things feel too big to make a difference. And it's interesting you brought up this topic. We had Larry Winget on the show this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And, Larry's new book coming out soon. Is it this week? It's going to be released. Might be this week. I've actually got a pre-release copy. I got a chance to get my hands on a copy from Larry. And it's What's Wrong with Damn Near Everything. And Larry tackles some really, really big problems in our society, in our government. And his answer really, and it's all Larry's answer is the same every time. It all comes back to personal responsibility. The only thing we can honestly change is ourselves.
Yeah, that was cool. It was me, Kevin. I had that on my computer in our kitchen. And my son, my older son, came walking through, and I was outside at a time. He came out and goes, "Who is that? I really like what he's saying." That was cool. When you guys were talking about the personal responsibility and that, and so yeah, it's good to hear that again and over and over. And I only heard part of the show with Larry, and actually heard one of the callers call and say it wasn't that. It wasn't personal responsibility. It was the government and big corporations and stuff, and it just made you go, oh, really? If we aren't taking personal responsibility, you know, who is?
Well, and it really, it's a beautiful answer, because everything else seems too big. You just said this. It seems so big. It seems so complicated. How could we possibly make a difference? Well, the beauty of it is it's simple. Just change yourself. Responsibility, do the right things. And then people say, well, what is the right thing? That's where it can get complicated, because there's so many people telling you what the right thing is. And we happen to be one of them when it comes to health. And I know we're just one voice in a million, and there are lots of people still contradicting what we say. You know, I guess, you know, you've got to try different things on your own and find out what works. Mm-hmm. But it really does come back to the fact that we don't have to overcomplicate this. The only person you can change is you. You could influence other people, but you can't change them. My skill in life is I'm an influencer. I know that, and I take that very seriously. I try to make sure that I'm influencing people in the right direction, but I also realize that's all it is influence. I can't change anybody. People call me all the time and say, oh my God, I have to thank you. You did this and this and this and this. And I'll say, no, I didn't. You did. You did every one of those things. I did none of them. I provided you some information. So I don't ever want to take credit for the changes people make other than to say, I brought you some new information that you were able to try and see if you got results. That's really what we do.
You know what? And that's good you said that too, because I know people get frustrated that family members might not be listening to what they're trying to share, because, you know, we believe in it so much, so we want our families to get it and to change and that. I like that, where you know, the influencing part, because they're eventually going to come with, you know, you can't shove it down their throat. You can influence and share, and by your example, they will eventually maybe try it and see how things work for them. But yeah, same thing.
You know, and when we talk about the problems in society or the big problems, again, you can't change anybody. You can change yourself. You can lead by example. You just said that. You can try to influence people. But what it really comes down to is, if we all worked on ourselves, then none of these problems would exist in the first place. So it always comes back to us as the individual. We're very fortunate in this country. We live in a system that allows that. We don't realize there were countries who couldn't live that way. You were forced not to. Granted, there's lots of things wrong and lots of things that need fixed, but we still live in a country that allows us to live that way. And it's our responsibility to do it.
Yeah, we're lucky. Yeah, good time to be talking about that, talking about freedom, you know. We have the freedom to choose.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I really didn't have any big topic about health that I was going to talk about today, but we've blown right through three segments, and we have some questions, so I want to make sure we get to them.
Yeah.
We're going to do that right after this break. Stick around. We'll be back. We're going to go straight to your calls and questions right after this. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim's here with me. This is Destination Health. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim's here with me. It's Destination Health. We're going to get right to your calls and questions. Let's go to Texas. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What can I help you with today?
First, just like to say I'm a longtime farmer. Been driving for 5 years now, farmed all my life before that. Almost 60 years old now.
Well,
say that my viewpoints have changed on a lot of things.
And I'm really glad to hear that. And that's why I made it a point. Kim, you know, this is a tough topic for me. There's no question a lot of people in trucking are farmers. The two industries have been very interrelated. And I honestly don't think it was their fault. I still don't. It's a lousy system. And I love it when we hear from somebody that at least says, I'm rethinking it. You know, I've been blasted by people who absolutely won't rethink it, say they'll never listen to me again.
Well, you know, it's like so many things. It's the way we learn to do it, you know.
Exactly.
Grew up with the chemicals and drugs, and you know that's how you farm, and it makes life so much easier you know, you can farm thousands of acres if you're using chemicals, but if you got to be out there cultivating and fighting the weeds, you know, it's kind of hard to do it on that scale.
Absolutely. And I understand, you know, even raising cattle, everything is based on weight. If you can't get enough weight on that cattle, you're never going to survive. There's not enough profit in our system anymore. It's been a race to the bottom. And the quickest way to fatten up cattle is to feed them corn. That's why they do it. That's why we have feedlots. When you look at what it takes to bring a cattle to market on grass alone, no wonder why we started doing it. I get it. But now we know better. Now we know all of the damage is not worth the profit.
Yeah, but you don't feed a steer long term on corn. You just feed them heavy corn to finish them out.
Well,
you
that know, used
if
to
you were going to feed them heavy corn for years, they would die.
Well, that used to be true. It's not anymore. It's still, we do still start a lot of them on grass and only put them on corn at the end, but we've also proven it only takes about 30 days on corn to wipe out all the health benefits of raising them on grass. So that's one problem. The other problem is they are starting them on corn younger and younger and literally raising them in feedlots sometimes. And they do live a very short life on corn and drugs because it's very profitable to do that. That's why we keep seeing these huge factory farming feedlots that are getting younger and younger cows and raising them on corn because it's faster to get them to market and there's more profit. So anyway,
yeah.
I know that's not what you call it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I finally, Kim, got my NutriQ done, so I'd like to go over it with you guys.
Absolutely. So looking at your NutriQ, overall, your scores look good. You don't have a lot. Nothing is off the charts like we talk about with a lot of people. But what we still look at, we look at the peaks. So your highest peak on your NutriQ is sugar handling. So we would have to talk about that. Your next two highest peaks are adrenal and pituitary. We'll kind of ignore the immune system for right now. That's a result of all these other things we're going to talk about. So sugar handling, adrenal, pituitary, very, very common in truck drivers. We see this problem over and over. And you have some digestive issues, mostly around liver and gallbladder. So overall, nothing really horrible here. That's the good news. What I'd like to hear from you, though, overall, how do you feel? I mean, how do you feel and how do you think your health is overall?
I feel I'm pretty healthy. I do carry more weight than I should. But the sugar handling really surprises me. And, you know, I don't know if it's just maybe something about the NutriQ and the way I answered some things or... You know, maybe I got something going on, but I mean, it really surprises me that that'd be an issue. I don't drink sodas, haven't for a couple of years. You know, been trying to eat pretty clean. You know, it's like a lot of people, you know, you start out good and then life happens and you kind of...
Right.
Fall off the wagon a little bit and trying to get back on it again. But, you know, I just, like I say, the sugar handling surprises me.
Yeah, it surprises a lot of people. It doesn't surprise me anymore. Our diet and our lifestyle has really hurt people in this area. The good news is that you're 60 and yours isn't that bad, but it's still... one of your biggest problems. And we could verify that, and maybe you already have. Have you had your A1C checked in the last 5 years?
I might have. I had a good physical done 2-3 years ago, but I mean, I don't even remember the numbers and everything. And, okay. You know, it didn't mean anything to me at the time. So, but I mean, there was nothing, you know, at that point, nobody was saying, well, you're pre-diabetic or anything like that. Or,
yeah, that
you know,
that's
basically, they were saying I was healthy.
Well, and that's part of the problem. Our system doesn't tell people that something's wrong till it's too late. It's almost like they want you to get to that point before they even mention it. And again, our system's designed like this. It's much more profitable to let you get sick, then tell you you're sick, and then treat you. There's a lot of money in that. There's almost no money in telling you you're heading for this problem, and that sometimes takes decades to show up. Now, the NutriQ is, I am in love with this software. It really, really works well. It's very accurate, but we could always verify this. I mean, you could always go get your A1C checked. You could buy a blood glucose meter and check your own blood sugar. My guess is you're going to see higher than normal readings. The good news is it's so easy to fix. You know, we talk a lot about blood sugar, and it's one of the easiest problems we fix. And we don't even have to address much in the way of digestion for you, because your digestion looks pretty damn healthy, and that's a good thing. And we would address the other problems, the blood sugar, adrenal, and pituitary, all at the same time. And, you know, like I say, for your age, you're pretty darn healthy. You're one of the better NutriQs we see. If you wanted to stay that way, I would... If you doubt it, I would verify the blood sugar readings, and that's easy to do.
Okay.
And I would start addressing them, because it can make a huge difference in your overall health and how long you're going to be around on the planet.
Okay. Yeah, like I say, that surprised me. The others, you know, and for the most part, the others are pretty low anyway, so...
They are. Yeah. Like I say, yours looks good. And the good news is you would really only have to focus on one thing. And it would start off with the blood sugar. The adrenals could become a part of it as well. I'm going to try to get to another quick call here. Ron in Wisconsin, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Kevin. I would like to know if you guys have any recommendations for shingles as far as getting rid of them, and also dealing with the pain.
Yes and yes. We're probably going to run out of time before I get to it all, but I will make sure we get you this information. I'll try to cover as much as I can before the end of the show. Believe it or not, the biggest driver of shingles, and I have some personal experience with this, is stress. Almost everybody has the virus in their body. It's the same virus that causes chicken pox. So if you had chicken pox as a kid, most of us did, you've got the virus. Science and medicine said we don't know why it shows up for some people and not for others, or why it shows up at certain times. It's really stress and a weakened immune system. So the way we address avoiding shingles or getting rid of them once you have them is not to address the shingles itself. It's like most things, we look at the root cause. We need to lower the stress and strengthen the immune system. And there's lots of ways we can do that. As far as the pain, that's a little trickier. And the music's playing, so I don't have time. But don't go away. In fact, I'm going to talk to you off the air, because I do want to give you some ideas on where to go with this. Kim, never fails. Not enough time, questions, but we'll do it again. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. Remember, eat real food. Sleep like a baby. Connect like you mean it, and move like your life depends on it. And always remember, a healthy person has hundreds of wishes, and a sick person only has one. Stay healthy, my friends. Kevin Rutherford. All right. So don't normally do this, but I said I wanted to get to everybody's calls and questions. So I want to make sure I finish up with Ron. Ron, you still with me?
Yes, I am.
So, you know, the pain is a little trickier issue. There's lots of, you know, over-the-counter stuff that might address it, might help a little. Not a big fan of recommending most of them because they're, in the long run, they're actually going to make things worse. They're not good for us. But I also realize that being in pain is miserable. I did actually suffer shingles one time, a pretty minor case. And absolutely, once I learned all this, I looked back and thought it was obvious. I was really stressed about work. We were working crazy hours. I went to the Louisville truck show, which is stressful. Right after the truck show, I drove out to the West Coast in 2 days, 3 days by myself. It was a very, very stressful time. And that's when shingles chose to show up. My immune system was weak. I look back now and I can see exactly why it happened. And there's a ton of research. So as far as pain goes, you know, you can try all the things they talk about and you may get some relief, and it is incredibly painful. I do know that. But the real answer here is to work on the stress response in the immune system. And, you know, it always comes back to diet, good, clean, real food diet, avoid any foods that are triggering the stress response. If you think that's part of the problem, I would highly recommend the FIT test so we can see if there are foods that are triggering that. And then, you know, work on things like meditation and deep breathing and relaxation and getting better sleep. And all of those things will lower the stress response, strengthen the immune system, and then shingles will never show up. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Anything you can get from the drugstore, I can testify, it does not work. I tried it all. Everything that they recommended, none of it works.
It's why I said you can try all those things. I'm not very confident that they're going to work. So other than what I talked about, you know, really clean diet and addressing the stress and the sleep, that's what will work, but it's not immediate. So, you know, when you're in that pain, I know you're looking for relief. I just don't have any good answers for that.
I appreciate that. I do. And it's not, I would have never thought I was under stress. I drive long hours, but I just never felt that I experience a lot of stress when I drive. I'm pretty relaxed when I've been doing it for so long now, and it's just something, it's a way of life for me, but I would have never thought I was under any kind of serious stress.
Well, what we didn't understand for a long time, and we understand now, is that we think of that stress as that physiological or that psychological stress response, but there's so many other things that your body perceives as stress. Let me tell you one that we all face when we're drivers, and you just said we drive a lot of hours. Inactivity is stressful on our body. Our body was designed to move. And when we don't move for long periods of time, it triggers the body's stress response. We don't think of things like that. We don't think of, I ate asparagus and it's triggering the stress response in my body. We don't think of those things as stress. When here's another hazard of our occupation. If we want the lowest stress possible, we should go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time. Drivers don't do that. We have a horrible sleep schedule. That is incredibly stressful on our body. And our body doesn't know the difference between all of those kinds of stress. It reacts the exact same way. So I'm like you. I think I handle that everyday stress of life really well. I'm pretty calm. I'm pretty laid back. And I had to relook at my whole life and say, wait a minute, you're overworking yourself. You're not sleeping good. You're not eating a clean diet. You can say you're calm and you handle stress all you want, but your body's still under stress constantly. And so we have to address those things and realize they are stress.
Okay, I will.
Good. And I haven't had a case of shingles since, and I'm confident it's never going to show up again.
Well, I hope that's the case with me also.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks, Ron.
All right, thanks.
And
yeah,
if you need any help with any of those things, by all means, call us. Kim, we're going to go get ready for a webinar.
I know. I'm looking forward to it. Anybody can join us. Give us a call.
Talk to you in a little bit. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Bye.